Welcome into another episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast. We're literally at the rink. Game four just ended not long ago, Sean. Game four of the Stanley Cup final. We do this for a living. We podcast every week. So I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to. And we will talk for the next 30 to 40 minutes. But I'm almost at a loss for words for what we're seeing.
Gobsmacked, I believe, is the word that you want to use here. It's been an incredible final. I mean, you think about it. In game four, there was an empty net goal, but every game's been decided by one goal. Two have been going to overtime. And remember the dire predictions of no goals.
Oh,
it's chaos. It is absolutely chaos. The winning team has scored at least four goals in every game in this series. I think there's, 33,
I believe.
33 goals at this point. It's been everything you could ask of a Stanley Cup final and more, and now we have at least two more games, if not three.
Yeah, we're down to a best of three after Carolina comes back and gets the split here in Vegas with a game four win, 5-3. I mean, just go through this, right? Carolina's up 2-0 in the first period of game one. They can't hold it. They lose the game. Vegas is up 2-0 in the first half of game two. Can't hold it. They lose the game. Vegas is up 4-0. 4-0. Going into the third period. A dominant second period. By the way, Vegas has outscored Carolina 9-1 in the second period. They're getting outscored 16-7 in all other periods, including overtime. But anyway, they're 4-0 in game three. And they can't hold it, but they win in overtime.
Double overtime.
Tonight, Carolina. Tonight, here it is. We're here Tuesday night. Carolina goes up 2-0 in the first 3.5 minutes of the game, and they can't hold it.
3-1 at the end of the period.
And they can't hold it. Again, the second period burns them. But Jordan Staal steps up at the biggest moments for this team. Jordan Staal now has 5 goals in this Stanley Cup final after scoring 2 in game 4. He is the 4th player in expansion era history, so since 1968, to score a goal in at least the first 4 games, or in the first 4 games, in every one of those games of a Stanley Cup final, and the first to do it since Mike Bossy in 1982. This is Jordan Staal's series.
I don't believe anybody's done 5, and I'm not going to bet against Jordan Staal, because you know why? He goes to the hoop after he scored his second goal. Where Jordan Martinook, the other Jordan, is our blogger at NHL.com, and I was talking to him about that goal. They're best friends, and he said that goal is so much harder than you think. Just to paint a picture for people that maybe haven't seen the highlights, or the puck is in the corner, it comes out. Nick Ehlers, they're on a weird line that's not their normal line. He chips it into the slot, but Jordan Staal's peeling away and falling down, and he reaches back, all 6'5", 235 pounds of him, like a ballerina, and somehow shoves a backhand past Carter Hart while he's falling away from the net like Michael Jordan. It was a goal that is almost unbelievable, and he laid on the ice afterwards, facing the ice, punching the ice, and said he just had a moment. And finally, somebody was able to hold on to a lead. Nick Ehlers scored a beautiful pool shot, empty netter, to make it 5-3, and they're able to walk out of here with a win. But Tortorella said it after the game. Basically called them Smalls.
Yeah.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Yep.
He's just dominating them in front of the net, and he's urging all of his teammates to join him there and make it a blue paint party.
Well, I mean, you think about it, their goals, you know, in game four, all four before Nick Ehlers' pool shot. I like that. You know, length of the ice, pool shot, empty net goals, all four in the slot, all four around the blue paint. And, you know, earlier in the series, and it's still happening in this series, I'm watching the Vegas Golden Knights earn a step, win a step to get to the front of the net. When they have the puck and they're getting opportunities, grade A opportunities because of it. But on the flip side, Carolina goes to the net like this. Vegas is having has big trouble handling them in front of the net, and especially handling Jordan Staal, because he's so big, he's hard to handle. But that is an area of concern right now for the Vegas Golden Knights as they head into Game 5 Thursday night at Lenovo Center in Raleigh, where we'll be heading tomorrow on Wednesday. But, like, that is a big area of concern, and John Tortorella was not shy about it. They have to be better in the blue paint area.
And their D's getting beat up, right? You know, I mean, first, let's talk about Brady McNabb. He takes an 88-mile-an-hour slap shot right in the face, busts everything open, stitches, broken nose. There's no way he's playing in game three. He shows up, plays with a birdcage, plays over 30 minutes, dominant. But he's limited. It looks like a couple other guys are limited. And I think for both teams, the thought process was, A, it was going to be a long series, and B, it was going to be let's beat the living snot out of the other teams for these three games. You look at game three, and I think it was in the first two periods, Vegas had 56 hits. Their forecheck was decimating the Carolina Hurricanes. Will Carrier left with an injury. Jalen Chatfield left and came back with an injury. They were absolutely punishing Carolina, trying to make them go away. And Carolina came back in game four and said, we're here again. And they are one of the best conditioned teams in all of hockey. So, you know, it really, Jordan Martinuk said to me today when I was doing the blog, his parting line, his way out was survival of the fittest now. And I hope we're the fittest. I think we are.
Yeah, and Jordan Staal keeps talking about how somebody's going to have to cry uncle eventually, right? Like, and he said that, you know, multiple times in this series. And it really is, you know, it's a clash of similar styles, and it's whoever does it better is what it comes down to. Vegas is just – what I'm finding that Vegas is doing, and they're doing it really well. It didn't obviously work in game four to get them the win, but they're finding ways to leak out. Their wingers are leaking out when the D get the puck, and they're using the Carolina Hurricanes' pressure against them.
Yeah, and they had the Stone goal, yep, and a couple other chances. And they're using the pop pass, too, the Hail Mary pass. They scored on the one in the first, I think it was the first game when whoever was fought off the two defensemen. But I've seen the puck high in the air more in this series from both sides than I've probably seen in all the games I watched during the regular season. Yeah.
Taylor Hall called it, they're throwing the 60-yard bomb. So we've got Jordan Staal saying that you got to go to the hoop, and Taylor Hall saying they got a 60-yard bomb. They're throwing the 60-yard bomb. Somebody's going to have to hit a home run here.
And when do we get to the soccer terms? The World Cup starts on Thursday.
Nobody wants that. Nobody wants the soccer term. I couldn't follow the soccer terms.
I'll give you a soccer term right now.
Okay.
The Brett Howden goal, which was a thing of beauty, coming down the wing, Keandre Miller right in front of him, he nutmegged him and went bar down.
Nutmeg is through the legs?
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, that was a thing of beauty. That's
14 goals.
Brett Howden, 14 goals in the playoffs. That's a Vegas Golden Knights record for a postseason. Jonathan Marchessault had 13 in 2023. He won the Conn Smythe Trophy that year. He didn't lead them in scoring. That was Jack Eichel, who had 26 points. Mitch Marner has 29. Mitch Marner has 8 points already in this series. They're putting up some massive numbers, but Brett Howden, he's a guy who scored 12 goals in the regular season. He's never been known as a goal scorer. He's always been known as a role player, a middle six guy, maybe a fourth line guy, but he's getting an opportunity to play with William Karlsson and Mitch Marner, and he looks like a different player. He simply just looks like a different player. Confident, obviously, with the puck going in the net, but he's generating chances. He's generating play. He's generating opportunities like a skilled player, and he's not really a skilled player, Sean.
Well, I think he is, and I think it's been hidden for a long time. Look, everybody that gets to the NHL is a skilled player, and they learn other jobs to stay in the NHL, and I think some of what he can bring to the table is being reintroduced in this series because of the skill of the players that he's playing with, and because of the fact, much like Logan Stankoven on the other side, who scored again tonight, scored the game opening goal for the fifth time and breaking a tie for the seventh time. They like playoff hockey. They like big boy hockey. That's what Logan Stankoven called it, and he is not a big boy, but he likes big boy hockey. Some players are just cut out for this, and it's not physical, it's mental. Yeah. Like, and that's, again, you go back to Jordan Staal, like, everybody talks about it. Like, look, Jordan Staal has the physical tools, but you won't find a more mentally strong man than that man. He's been through everything, and, you know, he knows this is likely his last chance, and he is unflappable.
Yeah, no, he really is. And I mentioned Mitch Marner, too. He's another guy who's been criticized up and down up until this year about his playoff performances, and Marner's been just nothing short of spectacular. He really just spectacular. Has the natural hat trick, quickest hat trick in Stanley Cup final history. 6 minutes and 10 seconds in game three. Scored 4 points in the second period. First player to do that in Stanley Cup final history. 29 points now. He's got 8 already in this series. It's a 2-2 series, Sean. He's the leading candidate for the Conn Smythe Trophy. It's not even close.
Well, yeah, but they got to win.
Yes, I agree with that.
I don't think, you know, he's it. If they don't win, there's certainly candidates on the Carolina side. You mentioned all the things he did in game three. He also missed a penalty shot.
Yeah.
At the start of the third period, which John Tortorella was like, oh, man, we needed that. And he was right. He's like, I'm not joking. He's like, we needed that the way the series was going. He didn't score. And the funniest thing about him not scoring is he didn't know the goalie had been replaced. He thought that Freddie Anderson was still in net, and it was Brandon Bussey who took over for the third period. And the only reason that's funny is because they catch with different hands.
Yeah.
One's a full right in Bussey, and the other one's what they call a normal goaltender, if any goaltenders are normal. But he didn't know. He was in on a penalty shot, and he didn't know. And I laughed, and I said, you know, because everybody's like, well, why is he doing this in Toronto? He couldn't do this in Toronto, and now he's doing it in Vegas. I'm like, in Toronto right now, they're saying, no hockey IQ. He doesn't know that they switch goalies. That's why he couldn't do it. And, of course, I'm being facetious and joking.
Yes.
But nobody saw this coming.
From Marner, no. But how did he not know? Doesn't somebody have to point out the fact on the bench?
You would think they'd be yelling on the bench. But it is so jarring because of the difference in catching gloves.
It is. And it might have made a difference on that penalty shot, which was a shorthanded penalty shot, mind you, that had he known. He said he didn't know until he was kind of coming down on him, which is, listen, it's a little random. Like, it's a little weird that he didn't know. Somebody had to say it. Maybe it's just so loud that he didn't hear it, didn't recognize it. He's so in his own zone.
It's loud here?
Oh, it's loud. It's loud in both of these buildings. I mean, these two buildings have just been phenomenal in this Stanley Cup final. I can't wait to get back to Raleigh because if it was a 3-1 series, I still think the Canes fans would bring it, no doubt about it.
And I think the Canes would win and we'd have to come back.
Probably. There. But it's a 2-2 series now. Their team's coming off a win. That crowd is going to be insane in a great way for Game 5 on Thursday night. It's a quick turnaround, too. Travel Wednesday, game Thursday. Quick turnaround for this series. But you brought it up, so let's bring it up here. Brandon Bussey, okay? This is a strange one, but I get it. And you talked about it before we started recording, too, and you made a very good point. Frederick Anderson had started the first 16 games of the playoffs for the Carolina Hurricanes. He gives up 4 goals on 16 shots in Game 3, and Bussey comes in to start the third period. I don't think that's why Carolina came back, but his save on the penalty shot is a big reason for to allow that. But Bussey plays well, makes 18 saves, that goes to double overtime, beaten on a Shea Theodore shot that goes off the end boards. I mean, that's just a wacky one. You can't really blame the goalie on that one at all. I really did think coming into Game 4, after having a break coming out of that Game 3, and then 2 days off, I thought Rod Brendamore was going to go back to Frederick Anderson because he's been his guy. Rod is very loyal to Frederick Anderson. But what we didn't know, and now Anderson, and maybe there was a sign there. Anderson did not practice Monday, maintenance day, right? And they still thought he's going to go back to Freddie Anderson. Brandon Bussey comes out. Pyotr Kochetkov is the backup. How can Freddie Anderson go from number one on the depth chart to number three on the depth chart? Had to be an injury. Nope. Healthy scratch. And Rod explained it afterwards.
Yeah, he said that the goalie coach spoke to Freddie, and Freddie said he needed a break, or the goalie coach said he needed a break, and they weren't going to dress him as the backup because he's got to sit in a weird place in this building in his equipment for 3 hours. You got to be ready to go in. And he was basically like, if he's not ready to go, we're giving him the night off. Until I saw him in the building as an emergency backup, I almost thought that they were going to send him home to Carolina last night so he was rested for Game 5 if they decide to go back to him. I think it's a really important distinction, and I don't think that it was clearly made. Rod said, and he wouldn't let anybody know until warm-ups.
Except Bussey.
Yeah. But we tried to get out of him 3 hours before the game, and he was having none of it. you know, he's like, I enjoy the suspense. You guys are going to have to wait, blah, 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 blah. He said after the game, you're going to have to wait another day, maybe two, before you find out who we're playing in game five. But like I said, he said that the goalie coach told him that Freddie needed a rest. I think it is hugely important to know, did Freddie tell the goalie coach that he needed a rest? Or did the goalie coach, through the conversation he had with Freddie, say, listen, Rod, I think this is our best course of action. We believe in Bussy, and I think this is the way to do it. Because those are two very different scenarios. And let me just say this. Everybody's going to say, well, he played in 8, 13, 16 games over 42 days. How can he be tired? He played in 3 games in 5.5 days with travel across the country with an overtime game and with somebody running into him in game 3. Into his head, which ended up in a disallowed goal. So that's a lot going on in 5 days.
And I'll give you the flip side of this, too. The other side, the Vegas side. Carter Hart's done the same. He didn't have somebody run into him, into his head. He did have Jackson Blake barrel into him tonight, you know, in game 4. It was a goalie interference penalty, but also a cross-check, so matching minors with Braden McNabb. But Carter Hart's given up 4 goals in every game in this series. He has been as vulnerable as I've seen a goalie in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Dude, he gave up 4 goals tonight. And I don't think he caught a puck clean all night. Everything was bouncing off his body. It was coming off his shoulder instead of in his glove. Like, one went off his head. Like, it was crazy how hard he was, how much trouble he was having tracking the puck.
So, it works out. Carolina puts Bussy in net. Kochetkov is the backup. Anderson doesn't dress. They give him the full rest, the full night off. And I agree with you, 3 games, 5 days, travel, all of that stuff plays a big role. He's not a guy who did that in the regular season.
He did not play 3 games in the regular season in a row, I don't think.
No, he didn't do that. So big difference, no question about it. I don't know where they're going to go for game 5. I don't have any idea because Rod Brendamore doesn't have an idea right now. At least
I think
he's
Rod
saying
has an idea.
He doesn't have an idea. Well, you know what? He might, but going into this game, I bet you he didn't. Going into game 4, I bet you it determined Bussy's play would determine that, if you ask me. And if they were facing elimination, I'm sure he's going back to Freddie Anderson because that's been his guy. But now I look at it and say, I think you got to ride the bus. I really do. I think you got to keep with it. He came into overtime. He came into the third period of game 3, and he played really well. And game 4, he played well enough. He was solid. Yes, he gave up 3, and they did blow a 3-1 lead. I understand that, but I'm not putting that on Bussy.
He didn't have a huge chance, especially on that one timer from Carlson in front of the net. He put it by him before he even moved, right? Like, that was such a nice pass, and bang, it's in the net. I think you go back, too, because, you know, Jordan Martinuk said it to me after the game. He was great. He made big saves in big moments. For a goalie, it's never how many you give up, how bad you look at it, how bad you look doing it. It's about those moments in the game where it's going to switch, where a bad goal is going to put you in a hole that maybe you can't get out of. And you didn't get that from Bussy in game 4. He made the saves that he needed to make.
Yeah, and he's done it all year. That's the thing. Like, he's a little unconventional. He was a guy that nobody really knew about coming into this season. But he came in and he won a ton of games for this team. He did it all year long. He filled a big role that they needed to have filled. And he came in here in this series and he filled a big role that he needed to have filled. I think it messes with the players if you now change that. They're probably like, okay, Bussy's in. Let's roll with this. We're gonna feel good about this now. I think they'd still say they'll feel good if it was Anderson, and maybe they would, but you just won a game with Bussy in net. You don't play the next day. It's not a back-to-back. I think you got to ride him again.
Yeah, and Rod says that players don't care. He said when he played, he didn't care who was in the goal. He just had to do his best job. Players care, right? Players care about everything. They want to win. They want the things that they think are going to give them the best chance to win. But I will say that the Carolina Hurricanes have an undying faith in Rod Brindamore and his ability to adapt in a series and to figure out things and to give them the best chance to win. There's been times in this series where they've looked really bad and player after player has said, Rod's going to figure it out. Rod and the staff are going to figure it out. They're going to put us in a position where they could win. Now they're four games in. They're even. They lost game one, so they've actually stolen home ice back, right, after four. I think if you lose game one and you lose game three in double overtime and you're going home for a best of three, you take that every day of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought game four was the first time this series where they were the better team for a long period of time, right? Like that.
They were even the better team in the second period. They only gave up six shots. Two of them went in. And like they're like, what the hell? Like we played a really good second period, and they still found a way to outscore us.
It is amazing. I mean, you think about the difference in periods, right? The first, Carolina's been really good in the first period. So, you know, twice in this series, they've had 2-0 leads quickly in the first period. The third period, I think they've been much better. Obviously, in game three, they were much better. You know, certainly tonight, game four, they were better. You could argue game one, they were better in the third period because they had to come back after giving up the lead. First periods, third periods, overtimes are kind of even, obviously. But the second period makes no sense from the Carolina Hurricanes perspective. They've given up 9 goals and scored 1 in the second period. I think some of that does go back to how Vegas is playing, which we talked about before. They get the puck in the defensive zone, and as soon as they do, a winger, and it's typically a Mark Stone or Marner or Howden, is leaking out, and they're looking to make that pass. And on a long change, it's hard, right? It's hard that you can't go make the change on a set breakout for the Golden Knights. If you just don't have time, especially with those forwards, those wingers leaking out, and they're hitting them with the pass and they're getting breakaways. And it's that second period has been a big struggle for Carolina. And you know, and Rod Brendamore was asked about it, and he's just, well, you know, they're a good team. We're not going to be able to control them for the entire game, but it's the same period every time. It's something that they got to look at.
Yeah, and I think part of it's like the man-on-man, right? Like the way that Carolina plays, like sometimes you lose guys because you're pinching. It was amazing. That game was 3-3, and like Jalen Chatfield's down by the goal line in the offensive zone, like hair flying, pushing a puck back and then kind of wandering his way back to the blue line. And you're like, dude, like the Carolina Hurricanes are a really good defensive team. But part of the reason that they're a really good defensive team is because they're really aggressive in the offensive zone against this Vegas team. It's very dangerous. And you've kind of looked at it and said, maybe they back up a little bit and they just keep going.
Well, it's not their game. It's not how they're built. It's not how they play. It would be a complete change for them. And I remember this a year ago that I asked Rod Brendamore this question. They were down 3-0 in the Florida Panthers in the conference final. And I said, do you have to consider changing the style a little bit, getting a little less aggressive because it looks like they're taking advantage of you? And he said, that's the dumbest question. Why would we do that? You know, that's not how we play. And I think here's a big difference for it. This has happened to Carolina in the past. As they get deeper in the playoffs and they play better teams, those teams know how to exploit the pressure, the man-to-man, all that. In the past, the Hurricanes had no answer when they did. Now they're a more skilled team and they're a faster team. Hall, Stankoven, Blake, Ehlers, right? They're making a big difference.
Keandre Miller.
They're making a big difference. And that's, I think, a big reason why they're in this series now is that in the past, they were not able to keep up score-wise with teams doing this.
No,
now they can.
They got down 2-0, and it was over. Fold the tents, right? You think about it wasn't last year, but when they played Florida the first year, when Florida came here and lost to Vegas. They played 4 games, lost them all by 1 goal. They played a 4 overtime game in which they couldn't get the winning goal. Like, that series would be completely different if they had any of these guys now that they have that can score. You know, I thought one of the funniest things of all was during media day and when everybody was available and everything, and before it happened, like, Eric Tulsky, their GM, is like, you know, everybody's like, oh, he's a stats guy. He's, you know, analytics. He's all that. He's like, we've built a team to compete in the Stanley Cup. That's what we believe in. We're not building a regular season team. We've built a team to compete when it gets hard. And he's right.
Yeah.
Like, he has built a team, and it's taken a little while, and they moved a lot of guys out, and they brought other guys in. But they're a team that's built for June. They're a team that's built for this.
And they're not getting anything out of Svechnikov or Aho right now. Similarly, Jack Eichel hasn't really done much for Vegas in this series, right? So that, if you look ahead, like, if Sebastian Aho gets going or Andrei Svechnikov gets going in Game 5, we'll look out. But if Jack Eichel gets going, which he had a really good Game 4, he was right on it and right there and just couldn't connect. But if he gets going, I'll say the same thing. Look out.
It is going to be amazing. Amazing theater over the next three games. We do a quick turnaround for Game 5. You're going to listen to this, and they're going to be ready to drop the puck.
Yeah, I know.
But then you're going to stretch it out over 6 and 7. There's 2 days off both ways. And the drama's just going to build and build. And there's so many storylines. Like, you're right. You brought it up earlier about Carter Hart. Look, John Tortorella believes in him so much. And every game has been a one-goal game. But there has to at least be an inkling about Adin Hill. He's a cup-winning goalie. Like, at what point do you say, I got to change things up? Look, they did it and they won. Maybe I can catch that lightning in a bottle.
I don't see that. I don't see it happening. There's been nothing to, you know, even think about with that. Like, I thought it on Jordan Staal's 3-1 goal, right? When he made it 3-1, I thought, okay, this will be the time where they do it. They didn't do it.
Even the crowd was braying a little bit at that point. They were not happy campers here.
Yeah. So, listen, we'll see where it goes. Game 5 Thursday night. But, Sean, there's also a ton of other things going on in the hockey world. We've gotten some news, a lot of news, as this Stanley Cup final has gone on. I might not even be able to remember all of it, but we know that Chris McFarland has left the Colorado Avalanche. He's now the president and general manager of the Nashville Predators. Peter Laviolette is the new coach of the LA Kings, and Edmonton could be is considering, according to reports, hiring Mike Babcock, and some things have to go on with that if that's going to happen. But first off, I guess, you know, McFarland. See that one coming?
I can't believe it. I honestly can't believe it. I sat in Colorado for the start of the Western Conference Final. They make the GM and the coach available together at the podium.
Yep.
Those two men were like brothers. They were in lockstep about what they wanted to do, about how the team was built, how it would be coached, how they would compete. It was harmonious. He's done a really good job. Look, everybody expected them to be here in the final. Things didn't go their way. Their two best players got hurt back to back. Everybody's proven how hard it is to get here year after year. Teams that belong here don't end up here for a variety of reasons. I can't believe that the Nashville Predators were able to pull him away. I mean, they did it by giving him a bigger role, giving him more say. Of course, anybody's going to do that and more money, but I am flabbergasted that he is in Nashville. And I'll say this about the Western Conference: they better watch out.
Yeah, Central Division stays in the same division, so he knows what's going on. There's no question about it. He doesn't have to be educated by what's happening. He's done a terrific job in Colorado. We'll see where it goes with them. Joe Sakic is going to be doing a press conference, I think, later this week.
Thursday.
Yeah, he's obviously, I believe he was close with Claude Lemieux, and he was with the family, and he was at the funeral, which was Monday. Obviously,
and by
time.
The way, we should also say, in all the conversation we had about Freddie Anderson, I think it's very fair to say that Freddie was very close to Claude Lemieux, who was his agent, but it went farther than that. They were like family, and this has been a very difficult week for a lot of people in the hockey community. You know, whatever you think about Claude, whatever his reputation was, there are people throughout the hockey community who adored him, who thought he was the greatest teammate ever. Ken Danico wrote something on social media about it, and he had a profound impact on a lot of people's lives. Freddie Anderson being one of them, Rasmus Anderson for the Vegas Golden Knights being another. Joe Sakic being another. So Joe's coming back, I believe on Thursday he's having a press conference in Denver, and he'll discuss the future. The immediate future is he's going to be the GM for the draft and beyond, probably free agency. And before Chris McFarland came, Joe Sakic was doing a very, very good job of stocking the cupboards for Colorado. He won every trade he made. He was like a gambler here on a blackjack heater. He was getting 21 every single time. So he wasn't me.
Yeah, he wasn't me. I haven't done any of that, though.
Me neither.
All right.
Bed by nine every night.
That's
then.
Right. But listen, hey, that's going to be an interesting one when Joe Sakic does come back and talk about that. Very good point on Freddie Anderson. Absolutely has to play a role. Just think about it if it was yourself, right? And you're somebody you're very close with passes away, suicide, it messes with you. And in the middle of that, you're in the biggest moment of your professional career. That's got to be hard. It's got to weigh on you. Maybe that's another reason why he needed a break. He needed a rest. And whether it was the goalie coach saying it because he noticed it, or whether it was Freddie Anderson saying it to the goalie coach, we don't know the answer to that just yet as we're recording this, but has to play a role. So you have the Colorado Avalanche situation. Let's go to the LA Kings. Peter Laviolette, it's his seventh job in the National Hockey League. That's a lot. That's a lot. But you know what he's done? He's been successful wherever he's gone, typically in the first couple of years, right? I mean, just with the New York Rangers, his past job, he was very successful in their first year. And then it wasn't so good in the second year. And that was it. LA is in a window where I believe Ken Holland, their GM, is in a window where they're looking in a 2 to 3 year window. And I am a big proponent, Sean, we talked about this. I am a big proponent of first-time guys getting an opportunity, you know, of guys who've earned it as an assistant or whatever it might be, or a college coach or an AHL coach. Ryan Warsofsky is a perfect example of that with the San Jose Sharks, getting an opportunity. But the more I think about it, the more I think the LA Kings are in that Peter Laviolette window than the Ryan Warsofsky window.
I feel like they're kicking the can down the road.
I think they are. But
Ken Holland has to do that because this is what he's got left, right? And you're at the back end of Drew Doughty. Anze Kopitar just left. But do they have the pieces? Do they have the pieces to be competitive? And if you don't, I think you're doing a disservice because when you decide to pull the plug in 2 years, let's say, when it's done, right, when Kenny's going to walk away into the sunset and you're like, okay, now we have to address all the problems. You're 2 years further down the road. You're 2 years of trying to fix a broken leg with a Band-Aid.
Yeah, but look at it this way. They're probably looking at the Vegas Golden Knights and saying they weren't much better than us this year, right? I'm just saying, like, that's a philosophy that they could have, right? They weren't that much better than us, and they're two wins away from the Stanley Cup.
Are you going to stack those two rosters side by side and say they're equal?
I'm not. I'm not going to do it. But that's a possibility. They look at the Pacific Division and they say it wasn't that good, right? Well, one of those teams is now two wins away from the Stanley Cup, so they're pretty good, obviously. I think that's how you're right. They're kicking the can down the road. They're 100% kicking the can down the road, but they're looking at it and say 2 to 3 years, that's the window here before we have to really figure out, okay, Can we retool this on the fly, or do we got to go into a full on rebuild here? But
do what their neighbors to the north did, right, and the Sharks.
Yeah, well, how about the Ducks? Right, right there. But they've got some pieces. They got Panarin on a 2 year deal. They got Kempe on a long deal. Doughty's nearing the end, but he still can play. You know, Fiala's going to be coming back. There's pieces to work with there.
The key is Byfield.
Byfield is the biggest key.
Quentin Byfield is the biggest key if he's better, if he develops into what everybody thought he was going to be. And look, for power forwards, sometimes it takes longer. You have to become a man. You can't do it at 18. You're playing against behemoths.
Especially a power center.
Yeah. You're playing against Jordan Staal.
Yeah.
You want to throw an 18-year-old to that wolf?
No. But he's not 18 anymore.
I know, but
he's
now...
He's probably 25 now, I think.
Now is where the window is, right, for him to make that huge jump and become the player that they thought he was going to be. And if he doesn't, that makes everything they're going to do in the future that much harder.
Yeah.
Or do they move him for two or three pieces now because they're going to compete for the next 2 years? Huge, huge risk. That's a all-in, we're going to win now, future be damned. Because that's a, that could be a Cam Neely trade.
I would not move him. I would not move him.
He can give you the pieces you need now.
He might be the piece you need now. I would not
move him. They've watched that show for years, and he hasn't been the piece.
I know, but I would not move him. And now Kopitar is out. It becomes more of his show.
It's a scary proposition. If he's good, it's great. If he's not good, now you don't have Kopitar to protect him anymore. Now he's drawing even harder assignments.
Yeah. Well, it's on Peter Laviolette to get the most out of him, right? I mean, that's where it's at right now.
And here's the other thing. Maybe you put Dylan Larkin on that team.
That's the other piece of news that we got to discuss. So, Dylan Larkin asked for a trade. Dylan Larkin has never made the playoffs in Detroit, right? Well, Dylan Larkin's part of that, okay? I understand. He looks at it and says, he's probably looking at it and say, look at the division. We've been passed, right? I'm not liking what I'm seeing here. They collapsed again this year. He's a part of that. He's part of that collapse, right? Can't take that. You got to take the hit on that too. But he asked for a trade. Original list comes out. It's reported: Florida Panthers, Vegas Golden Knights, and the Minnesota Wild. All right. Well, send me to a team that recently won the Stanley Cup, or one that you know has some of my close friends on it. Okay, it'll expand, but. I'm really curious to see where this goes because I'm fairly certain that Steve Yzerman is not just going to make a deal to get Dylan Larkin out because Dylan Larkin doesn't want to be there. You're under contract. And, oh, by the way, in 1 year, your no trade protection is out the door. You don't have it anymore. He could very well say to Dylan Larkin, I'm not moving you. Not yet. Not until I find the right deal. I don't know if that's the best way because now you've got your captain is not in a good spot. Think of the New York Rangers with Jacob Trouba, right? It was a tough spot for him. He couldn't lead. They wanted to move him. He didn't want to move. It was a different, you know, it's obviously a 180 from the Larkin situation. But I think he ends up in Minnesota. I really do. I think that's the place that needs him the most. They need that type of, they need a center badly, a top six center badly. And they may have some pieces to send the other way.
Yeah, Billy's going to overpay. That's the move Billy needs. That's the move Billy needed to make before he got Quinn Hughes. That's the move that killed him in the playoffs was the lack of center depth.
Well, especially when Eriksson Ek got hurt.
Yeah. So, and he's a gunslinger. Yeah. Billy Guerin's a gunslinger, and I think they find a way to make a deal. Look, I think that Dylan Larkin looks at it and he says, you know, maybe we're better, but all these pieces, the Iser plan is 2 or 3 years away still. You got all those guys in Grand Rapids. Grand Rapids was really good this year. They were second best team in the AHL until the playoffs came. And he's like, this Detroit team's going to be really good, but they're going to be really good when I'm old. And I don't want that. I want to compete now. I've given the city a decade of my life. And I've eaten all the stuff that's had to come my way and all the losing. And I've been a good soldier. And in good conscience, I can't do it anymore. And I don't think Stevie can keep him. I don't. I think, especially because you're counting on young kids, you need people to lead them. You can't have a guy that's completely checked out.
He's not going to be bullied into a deal, though. Like, that's my point. I think he will be moved. Before the start of next season, he will be moved. But he's not going to be bullied into a deal. Like, he's going to make the deal that he thinks that is the best deal for the Detroit Red Wings, whatever it is. And I think you're right. I think it's with the Minnesota Wild because Bill Guerin will pay more. Whether it's Yurov, Charlie Strammel, Pick, whatever it might be, Billy Guerin will outbid the next one because he wants him that bad and he knows he needs him that bad.
I was going to say maybe it's one of his goalies, but Detroit has 92 goalies.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting one with the Wild because Wallstedt is their goalie of the future, but Philip Gustafson's under contract on a long-term deal. Wallstedt in a lot of places will be able to, maybe not with Detroit because of their goaltending situation, but Wallstedt in a lot of places would be able to get them the center that they need in a trade. But do you trade him? You can't.
Can't trade a franchise goalie.
Can't trade a franchise goalie. It sets you back. So that is another piece. And then, as I mentioned, the Oilers, which is not finalized with Mike Babcock. There's a lot of, you know, stuff going on, an investigation that's being reported that, you know, with the NHL running it, the NHLPA is wants it just based off of the past with Babcock. Maybe by next week when we do this, we will have a Stanley Cup champion. And maybe the Oilers will have Mike Babcock as a coach. We don't know. But for now, we're here.
But there's one more piece of news. The Toronto Maple Leafs, they've interviewed 50 people, and somehow they didn't call either you or I.
55.
55 people, and somehow neither one of us made the cut. They're down to in-person interviews now, maybe five players.
Coaches.
I mean, five coaches, some of whom are former players. You had a great story this week. Thomas Hertl scored, and he had already gotten the monkey off his back, which he called King Kong earlier in the playoffs. But he mentioned in passing that Joe Pavelski had called him or texted him and cheered him up and put him on the right path, and he's playing consistently now. And you spoke to Joe for that story.
At 6:30 in the morning.
At 6:30 in the morning, because he was going fishing. And you got up and you did it. And kudos to you. But now you got to get up again before he goes out fishing and ask him about the Toronto job, because supposedly he's one of the guys that was mentioned as somebody who they were interested in. And look, I get it. They're kind of looking around, and they're looking at who's worked for other teams, right? Like, people are looking at guys like Torts now because of what he did with Vegas. They're looking for the next Marty St. Louis, right? The player who's still plugged in with the current NHL, knows people, knows the way that it runs, but has been coaching youth hockey and is going to bring some of that freshness into it, right? Like, that's the Marty St. Louis story. That's what Joe is now, right? And I don't want to say there's not original thinking, but there is a lot of, oh, this worked for that team. Maybe who's the next Marty St. Louis? And maybe Joe's that guy, and they're going to have that conversation. I don't know what comes of it. I can't imagine you have your first interview to be a coach and you end up in Toronto, the center of the hockey universe, and I can't imagine that flies. But it is a really interesting dynamic for that coach, because they're going to have to deal with Austin Matthews. They're going to have to deal with William Nylander. They're going to have to deal with all the baggage that's been with that organization for years. And then they're going to have to deal, 99% likely, with Gavin McKenna, the number one pick. And it's going to have to be a coach that can handle all those things. Veterans, rookies, star players, huge egos. It's not a cookie cutter job.
I don't think it's a coach that it can be a first year guy who's never done it before at any level before, higher than youth hockey, right? The Canadiens job was almost the perfect fit for a guy like that. And that was Marty St. Louis, who, by the way, grew up in Laval, speaks the language, right? Cole Caulfield, Marty St. Louis. I mean, come on. I mean, it was an absolute perfect fit.
And there wasn't the same pressure.
No.
They were rebuilding.
They were rebuilding. There was no pressure. They came
They're
in
and ahead.
Said, yes. They came in and said, we don't expect much. We just want to keep growing. That's it. Just little steps here and there and there, right? It was a perfect job for a guy like Marty St. Louis. He had also been out a little bit longer than Joe Pavelski's been out right now. I think if Joe Pavelski wants to coach in this league, he could be a really good coach in this league. If you ask anybody who coached him, Pete DeBoer being the perfect example, he'll tell you that guy can coach. But I think Joe Pavelski is interested because I think he wants, if I had to guess, I think he wants to go through the interview process and see what that's all about.
And that's why he's going to be a good coach, because he wants to be prepared.
Yeah.
He knows he's not doing it this time.
Right.
But he wants the experience of going through it so he can adjust for next time.
And this is not, it's just not a job for, to me, it's just not a job for a guy who's coming in cold and has never done it before. There's a lot of moving parts here, and it just so happens to be in Toronto.
Yeah, but you're also looking at it from a very traditional hockey standpoint, which I don't know that Toronto's going to follow now with the new GM and Matt Sundin being involved. And that's why I said it's a 99% chance that they take Gavin McKenna, because they might go a different way. Like, you really can't predict what's going to happen in Toronto anymore.
Well, that one will be interesting because they are getting down closer, I guess, to naming a coach. A lot of news around the league right now, but we got to get out of here, Sean, because we're going to be on flights tomorrow. That would be Wednesday, to go back to Raleigh for Game 5, which is Thursday. And then we're coming back here the next day.
And 2 more days in Vegas.
There you go. And
a couple more good meals with our good friend Brian Slagle.
It will be wonderful. And then the Stanley Cup will be in the building when we're back here. Maybe it gets won. But this series got a big Game 5 coming up.
It's going to be awesome. And I think it's shown, right? The viewership in the States has shown, like, this is what people want to watch. Everybody thought this was going to be a dull series between two teams that don't really have national followings. And it hasn't been that. It's been exciting. The ratings are boffo, as they say in the business for ESPN. It was over 6 million at one point during Game 3. Those are numbers nobody expected. I think if you're not watching this final because you have something against Carolina and you have something against Vegas and you don't think it's going to be good, you're doing yourself a disservice, because this is some of the best playoff hockey I've ever seen.
It's terrific theater. We are enjoying it. So keep enjoying it. Enjoy the hockey.